I won't let my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. In two clinical studies, Tremfya guselkumab, taken by injection, provided 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks in 7 out of 10 adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. In a study, nearly 7 out of 10 patients with 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks were still clearer at 5 years. At 1 year and thereafter, patients and healthcare providers knew that Tremfya was being used. This may have increased results. Results may vary.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Hulu is coming in hot this month with new shows, new movies, and all new seasons of your faves. Don't miss FX's Clipped, the story of one NBA team's racial reckoning, starring Lawrence Fishburne. Stream a new season of Shoresy, the underdog hockey comedy that might just knock your teeth out. Then catch the high-speed drama Ferrari, starring Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz. Kick your streaming into high gear this month with so much new stuff to watch on Hulu.
Hello, and welcome everybody to another episode of Pod Strickland. I'm your host, Shwini Poon. This is episode 411. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Stacey. That is at StaceyPenn89 on Twitter. Stacey, how are you doing on this Monday evening, where it finally is not 95 degrees outside?
Yeah, it was actually kind of nice outside today. Took some calls outside. Doing pretty well.
Good to hear. We're not here to talk about how we're doing. We're here to talk about basketball. But before we do that, do have to make a few announcements. First, meet that Strickland has an Instagram. Check that out. That is at the Strickland on Instagram. We're posting all kinds of new content on there. The Strickland also has a YouTube channel where you may be watching this podcast. If you are, if not done so already, please hit like, subscribe to the channel, leave us a comment. That'd be a huge help to us. Strickland also has merchandise, which you can find on our website at www.thestrick.land. There's a link to the merchandise store. You can find all kinds of cool stuff on there. T-shirts, sweatshirts, hats, coffee mugs, water bottles, you name it, we've got it. Strickland finally has a Patreon, which you can subscribe to. There are a number of different tiers. There's a $6 tier that gets you access to Pod Strickland, the podcast that I host every Friday with Prez. You also get access to Takes from Office Bozos, our newest podcast that is hosted by Andrew Zeal, a.k.a. Doug, along with Zach Blatter. And you get access to the Strickland Discord, where the conversation never stops. There's a further tier. There's a $9 tier that gets you access to Strickland Roll, my solo pod, where I rant for everything Super Mario. You also get access to wonderful premium articles by Matthew Murdo, one of the best in the business. And now you get access to Strickland NFL, which you guessed it is our podcast that is about the NFL. There are further tiers, $15 tier, $30 tier, $50 tier, and $100 tier. There's come a variety of additional benefits, including some power recordings, merchandise accounts, and potentially co-hosting a podcast alongside yourself, alongside myself, yours truly one day, whether you choose to subscribe or not. None of this would be possible without you. And none of this would be possible without BetOnline. BetOnline is your number one source for the NBA Finals and Stanley Cup Finals this season. Every stat, every matchup, and even live odds and spreads while the games are being played. When the game's over, head on over to our online casino, get in on a game of blackjack or poker, or unwind with one of our over 150 slot games. Head to the website today to get in on the action. Use promo code BELIEVE for your 15% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here. BetOnline, they might want to. They're going to need to update this ad read pretty soon. Stanley Cup Finals ending tonight. Nothing has happened as far as the Knicks are concerned over the last few days. Today is the option date for OG Anunoby. It is widely expected he will opt out. I would expect him to opt out. So if that happens,
is the deadline 5:30?
I think it's midnight. Oh. I have no idea. I think it's midnight. I don't think it matters. He's not going to opt in.
Well, it would matter for this pod because that would be happening in 2 minutes.
I don't think it matters because he's going to opt out. Doesn't matter what he does. He's going to opt out. Like, he's just not – it doesn't matter. Like, he's going to do it one way or the other. I'm not losing too much sleep over that. aside from that, you know, we've got the NBA draft starting in 2 days. Starting, I should say, because now it's a 2-day draft because the NBA thinks they're the NFL. The Knicks have the 24th pick and the 25th pick. I don't know. I'm very interested to see what the Knicks are up to this week because we have rumors that they have talked to teams on Mitchell Robinson. There are rumors that they are interested in Paul George, which we have talked about on previous pods. I don't know what to make of it. Figuring out the math and getting all that stuff to work is not easy. I spent much time over the weekend doing it, and unless they want to include Randall, which so far we don't know if they do or not, or if they want to start including other pieces aside from Mitch from the rotation, be it somebody making as little as Deuce or somebody making as much as Josh Hart, it's very hard. It's very hard to do it while keeping the rest of your rotation in place aside from Mitch Robinson. And they must have something up their sleeves if they're still kicking on it. I have no idea what that would be. My guess is that it would involve Julius Randle, but I have no way to confirm that. And I am speculating just as much as anybody else out there.
You know, from our conversation with the strict court, I would imagine if it included Julius Randle, you would be on board.
I mean, I would need to know what the entire deal looks like. But I tend to think that Paul George pushes your ceiling higher. I also think it is worth... I do think losing Randle and Mitch changes the calculus a bit. Just because I still think I'm not tied to Mitch Robinson. I'm not like, oh my God, you can't trade him at any cost. I would be a little nervous about trading him and Randle for PG and then not having a plan for hopefully to address the backup five spot. And if the plan is just Precious Chua, like that's not a real plan to me. Now, if they make that trade and then they guarantee Bogdanovich's contract and now you have that chip to play with, that's something to consider. I don't know. Like, I have to look at it again, but I'm pretty sure that depending on where they land in the world of aprons, they could maybe even trade for somebody like Jared Allen. I don't know that they would do that. I would suspect that probably isn't the greatest fit because Jared Allen is a starter and asking him to come off the bench might not be a harmonious situation. You can look at somebody like Robert Williams, who obviously has significant injury issues, but when healthy is extremely effective and checks off the boxes that we know Tom Thibodeau wants from his centers, which is primarily good at rebounding, good at rim protection. I think it's reasonable to believe that, and we don't know obviously again what exactly what a trade would look like, but if it was Mitchell Robinson and Julius Randle going out as the primary pieces, I actually don't think the Knicks should have to trade any picks in that scenario at all. Like they absolutely should not. And two, as I mentioned, I think then you really have to get serious about what we're doing with the backup center spot. I know that Goga Bitadze's name has been floating out there. I think I might have mentioned him on a podcast a few weeks ago. I actually like Goga. I think he's like an interesting buy low type of guy. And I thought he had a nice year for Orlando when he played. I'm not sure I'm ready to just be like, well, we got Goga to back up Iheart. We're good to go. Like, I think that if you're trading for Paul George, it probably behooves you to be extremely aggressive in subsequent moves. Taj Gibson would be the opposite of aggressive. That would probably be...
He's a pretty aggressive guy. I do want to go back. So Precious struggled in the playoffs at the four. At the five, he generally thrived, especially next to OG Anunoby. I would be curious, like, why you think that's a non-starter to bring him back as a as your backup five. I mean, you can add some depth to the draft to add a little size, but he seemed pretty capable if you're just asking him to be the five.
I don't know if I agree with that. I don't think he's – I still think he's good enough offensively, and defensively he just has so many brain farts that it's hard to be like, okay, he's our backup five. Because it's like, now if you, it's it maybe if you have a rotation that is like Brunson, Dante, PG, OG, Isaiah Hartenstein, you know, Deuce McBride, and I'm missing, and Josh Hart, maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe you're just, those seven guys will be so good collectively that having Precious as your backup big is not a big deal. It's very possible. And we saw the Knicks. You know, they were able to kind of sustain being good while they dealt with a lot of injuries, Mitchell Robinson being one of those injuries. So maybe that gives the front office confidence in like being, hey, if we can, if, you know, if this is what we could do when we didn't even have, like, you know, on top of Randall and Mitch being out, OG was out. If we're presumably bringing OG back and now we have Paul George, Precious is fine actually as our backup five. That might be true. It might be true. I don't know. But again, like, I just think it gets tricky where you're like, okay, Randall and Mitch for PG, I get that part. But like, do I think the Knicks think that's fair value? I don't know. Mitch's contract is obviously great. It's descending, which I would assume to the Clippers might actually be extremely attractive to them. But like, I don't know. I worry a little bit about where you're headed with the injury risk. I know Paul George had a healthy season last year. So maybe that's obviously a good sign for him. But OG is well documented, his injury issues. Obviously did not finish the season healthy, although he tried to battle through it in game seven. Yeah, I don't know. But again, this is where you just keep going back and forth. It's like, okay, but is Mitchell Robinson healthy, right? And it's like, all right, well, he's not. And, you know, the upside swing of Paul George is enticing. And, yeah, look, I think the Precious argument is less like, is Precious good enough to be the backup five and more? Does it matter how, like, can you just get away with Precious being your backup five if your top seven guys are that stacked? I did not even bring him up. Bogey would potentially be back in the scenario I just outlined also. And for whatever his flaws, I think he's still pretty clearly an NBA player with value that can still give you, you know, solid production in certain ways. So yeah, there's a lot obviously to kind of go. By the way, OG Anunoby has officially declined his $19.9 million player option for next season, which is the least surprising thing ever.
Oh, it's official?
Yeah, Fred Katz has tweeted out.
Slop. So a couple things on the Precious thing. So in the playoffs, it was only 100 minutes. PBP stats is down right now, but I looked this up a week or so ago, and without Hartenstein or Mitch on the floor, Precious actually had a +8 net rating in about 100 minutes during the playoffs. I think he looked pretty good in that next to OG. I don't know if you've sent, like, that was the lineup we all wanted to see, OG, Randall, Precious. I think that can work pretty well with Paul George. And he's still 24, and he improved quite a bit. I wouldn't mind that as a bet. And then if he really isn't holding up and you're seeing that it's, you know, you're hemorrhaging points in the backup minutes, you know, then maybe at the trade deadline you make a move, but I certainly wouldn't let that. And you keep your eyes open and you can draft someone, but they have a lot of moves at backup center. I don't think that's something that would hamstring them that much. It's really the kind of stock, the shock value of you're trading a guy who's 29, 30. Who's just going to be 30 next year, right?
Sorry, who's going to be 30 next year? Julius,
yeah. So yeah. He's 29 right now. He'll turn 30 in November. So soon after the season starts.
It's his age 30 season. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're trading guy his age 30 season for a guy who is 34, obviously on the downside. You know, when I looked up a lot of his numbers, I knew Paul George had been good last year, but you know, he played 72 games, which I didn't expect that was the case. And when he plays, he's still very effective. With other stars, I think something you brought up a lot is, are they going to be willing to defer to Brunson? You know, that is very much what he said he wants, right? And he's had experience playing next to stars, and you know, those teams have had success. So from that perspective, it's a clean fit. And we worry about is this the year where the wheels fall off, right? And the guy really experiences serious injury issues. The more I think about it, the more I'm more zen about that. One, we've seen plenty of players these days, especially the bigger wings, kind of make it into their upper 30s without that kind of a decline, right? Everyone, you know, when the Suns traded for Chris Paul, people were like, he's washed, right? It was a couple more years before that happened. And then the last part of this is, if Randall does not want to sign an extension and you have to pay him next year, you eventually might end up paying a 34, 35-year-old guy who's declining anyway a lot more money than you want. I guess the other thing, I'll throw this back to you, how much does it change if Paul George says, I only want to play ball and be traded if the Knicks will give me a 5-year max or something? You know, how does that
kind of play? He can't get a 5-year max. He can get like a 4-year max. But so I would tell him then no. It's pretty simple.
So, but what do you think that market is, and what do you think the Knicks would ultimately?
I don't think there's a single team that'll give him a max contract. I don't think there's one. I only think there's one.
So, what would the Knicks be on hook for? You know, let's say he opts in, they trade for him. What do you think they'd be up? They'd be on hook for?
Kyrie got what, 3 years, $126 million last year? I'd offer him something like that.
Then you don't think anyone would top that?
I mean, maybe they would. I'm just telling you what I'd be comfortable with. Three, maybe the max, probably 3-135. It's probably the max I would feel comfortable with.
And then you've traded,
and that's on top of him already having picking up his option year at $48.7 million. So, like, to me, I mean, you're basically signing up for 4 years of Paul George. I think it's safe to say that probably the back end of that contract isn't great, but you're betting that the first couple of years are, and maybe that opens up your window. I mean, really, all this boils down to is like, how long do you perceive your window to be right now? And it's easy to just be like, oh, well, as long as we have Jalen Brunson, our window's open. I don't think
he's going to get paid next year, right? So,
well, he might get paid this summer. He might just take the extension for all we know.
But the contract will bump up starting next
year. Yeah, but it's not even about that, though. It's just that, like, with the way this new CBA is working, I don't think you can just be like, well, we have this guy who we know or believe can be the best player in a championship team. So as long as we have him, we have a chance for the next X amount of years. And I just don't think that's how it works. Here's a very simple one. If Daryl Morey was just like, you know what, I'm fucking bored, I'm going to give KCP $30 million a year. So KCP leaves because he's like, fuck that. I mean, I'm getting $30 million a year. If Denver doesn't even come close to this, which I don't think they would in that scenario, I'm out, right? Let's say he leaves. I would feel pretty confident, and I know this might sound ridiculous to people, I'd feel pretty confident saying this. I think that would close Denver's championship window for at least next season. And that's with Nikola Jokic in his prime. Like, the realities of this, you know, all this apron and how punitive it is and the tax and all this stuff, like, I don't think people have fully reconciled with it. So, like, I'll be completely honest. I haven't really thought this through either. Like, I haven't really played it out and gamed it out. You know, I'm sure that fucking Jeremy has. Loser. But, like, you know, if you, you know, if you game it out, like, will the Knicks feasibly be a contender after the next couple of years? I don't know. Maybe at that point, because of the restrictions and if they're a second apron team, they would have to give up pieces. And, you know, maybe it requires a retool. I mean, we see this all the time in the NFL, actually, more than other sports, where even if you have a quarterback in their prime, there might be years where you're like, all right, we need to dial it back, get our cap back in order, and then a year from now we can go back and spend and maybe put ourselves in a better position to contend that year. You see this more in the NFL, mostly because the cap is In some ways, it's more of a hard cap, but in other ways, it's flexible. The contracts being a lot more flexible make this easier to stomach. But like, this might be a thing that now teams have to be careful with and operate with that in mind in this new NBA. Like, maybe you have to pick, like, hey, we're going for it for the next 2 years because that's how long we have with that we can afford to be, you know, in the second apron and not have access to anything other than any draft picks we have and second round picks and veteran minimum contracts and stuff like that. Like, it might be a new reality. So if, you know, in that sense, if you're like, well, this is our window and if, you know, we'll see what happens in the next couple of years, if it doesn't get done, it doesn't get done and we'll figure it out then. But like, you know, what you really have to consider then is like, does getting Paul George bump us up? Does that elevate the ceiling of the team enough that we feel strongly that we can be a contender now? And I don't know. I go back and forth on this a lot because I think Paul George is definitely not as good as he was, you know, whatever, at his best. But I also think people are ignoring how good he actually was last year.
Well, he was top 10 in EPM, right? He's
top 10 in EPM.
7-4, something like that, on efficient, yeah. Really efficient, yeah. Numbers.
He's a high volume 3-point shooter. And I think the main thing is like his skill set works so nicely off of Jalen Brunson. And when you think about like the way the Knicks were playing towards the end of the season in terms of stylistically on the offensive end, you can really kind of cleanly imagine how he slots in there. And then, you know, the Eastern Conference matchup portion of it all, he is a really good matchup for any series against the Celtics. Having him and OG, obviously assuming we're bringing OG back, I mean, that gives you as good a chance as any other wing duo will be in terms of being able to match up and maybe even win those matchups against Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown.
Yeah, I mean, the fit is easy to see. I think that's a pretty good point. It's like, in this new world, do you need to kind of cash in your chips more frequently? Because you're going to have to do it anyway pretty often, right? And I will say the Randle injury was a freak injury this year, but last year, the ankle problem, right? It's not like, you know, I would still call Randle a much more durable player than Paul George, but, you know, it's not like he's been completely injury proof. I will say this, if the Knicks could make it work with other pieces, right? Something like Mitch, Boyan, you know, maybe they have to give up Deuce. I know the math has had my head spinning too. Is it almost better though? Like, let's say they had to give up a guy like Dante. It was a Mitch, Dante, Bogdanovich, right? I think Omar said that works. Would you rather give up Randle than that? What? Mitch, what works? Mitch, Boyan, and Dante for Paul George as the salaries, and then whatever picks are needed.
I mean, I don't know.
Is that better than trading Randle?
I don't know. Is it? Like,
because I think losing Dante's shooting would be a big deal.
I think it's all a big deal. We're a good team, like, we're a really good team. And I think that, you know, you're not talking about giving up like fucking Dennis Smith Jr. in a second round pick for Derrick Rose or something. You're talking about actual players that actually help you win basketball games at high levels that have genuine skill, like elite skill sets, right? Dante's, I mean, he's, I think,
well, DSJ was elite at slinging that wood, apparently.
That's his God-given talent, as he told you himself. But Dante, I think, was like, I think he had the third highest attempt rate from three last year in terms of threes per 100 possessions. He also shot like 41% from three, which, so basically like an insane combination of volume and accuracy from beyond the arc. I still don't think people understand how insane of a shooting season that was from him. The flip side, you know, if you want to do this, we can keep kind of doing this, but like the flip side is it was a career season. Guess what? Sometimes guys have career seasons and it's not, oh, they're going to be this good all the time. It was a career season. So is he going to be as good next year? I don't know. But maybe this is the time to sell high on him because his value will never be higher than it is right now. He's still got 3 years left on this ridiculous contract we gave him, just absolute pennies in the grand scheme of the NBA. And like I said, his shooting volume and accuracy was crazy. And, you know, after a slow start in the playoffs, especially in the Philly series, I thought he really, at least offensively, found himself and was a lot better towards the end of that Philly series and then obviously in the Pacers series. So, like, he's coming off a good playoff showing, which was a concern with him. He hasn't historically been great in the playoffs. So that's, you know, that's something to consider. Mitchell Robinson, we've already talked about many times, so I don't think I need to kind of clarify who my thoughts are there. I mean, the main thing that you're basically doing then is you're saying Paul George is you're going to be your starting two, and OG's your three, and Randall's your four, and just feels a little
clunky.
You look clunky, a little not. I know Paul George is a good athlete. He does not like a. He's, I mean, obviously not the athlete he was when he was younger, but I still don't think you'd be necessarily an elite athletic team.
I mean, yeah. Do you think he's still a pretty good defender, though? He can defend.
Oh, yeah, he's still a good defender. There's no question he's still a phenomenal player. It's just.
And then the other question is, do you think he has the ball handling to play the two? Because you'd be relying on him a lot because it's just Brunson and, you know.
OG's I don't know.
Really a ball handler.
I don't know. And I mean, the real concern is this. Like, we have some level of evidence that Mitchell Robinson can help you win ball games in the playoffs. We have some sample of evidence that Dante DiVincenzo can help you win ball games in the playoffs. And we have some sample of evidence with both those guys that not only can they help you win ball games, but they can do it in big situations, in big spots. And we know this because they have done it. We saw it this year. And in Mitch Robinson's case, we saw it last year in the playoffs too, when he completely destroyed Cleveland in the first round of the playoffs. So we have evidence of that. We can all sit here and believe in Julius Randle. And it still feels like to me, like if it was going to happen, this would have been the year that something happened for him in the playoffs, just with how the team was set up and everything. But that's what I think. I don't know that. I don't know that. And if you were like bet the next 3 years of your franchise on this guy, I don't know that I'd feel comfortable doing that. It would make me a little queasy. Good to be completely honest. So what you're like, this is not so much a bet to me just on Paul George as much as it is Julius Randle. Because yeah, I mean you're basically making your big move, right? You know, if your Dante's out and Mitch is out and you know Bogdanovich's contract is out and whatever, that's your big move. Like you're pretty much gonna be a second apron team at that point. And that's what it is. But like so much of that is based on Julius Randle. And now you've reduced your depth in other places. I don't know. It's tough.
Well, that's another thing in terms of the apron situation. Do you think the league is going to, because this would be, I don't want to say in terms of pay, it would definitely be a super team, right? If you have Brunson in his next contract, Randle in his next contract, and Paul George all on the same team.
And OG.
And OG, that is very much a super team. It does seem like the league is starting to favor the teams with a little more balance. You know, on the other side, you know, Boston was a second apron team, right, this year? Or...
Yeah, they paid a lot.
So you do have to pay, but is it worth concentrating all that in four players, even if they are all really good? And at that point, if you're going to do that, I think they really have to be extremely complimentary. I wouldn't say Randle is redundant with Brunson or with any of these guys, but if you have Paul George, how much do you need Randle's shot creation? You know, if you have, you know, if you have Paul George, how much do you need Randle's ability to play the four and you know, attack slower fours? Like you have two other guys in OG and Paul George who can play that. Plus, you know, they'd probably be keeping Hart at that point. If you're going to, I think, make the roster that top heavy, those four guys have to collectively cover as much space as possible in terms of skill sets, there's probably just like enough redundancy where in that Randall spot, if you were to, if you had Paul George and Brunson, you would probably want somebody to give you more as a defender and shooter, or a couple of guys who might give you more on defense and shooting to surround those two guys. It's just, you know, the question is Paul George's health, and you're punting on 4 years of Randall. I think that's what it comes down to. And is, are those 4 years, especially when you have to pay up for it, worth it to keep this core together with Randall? You know, how much of how great,
I mean, it's about Randall. It's like, it's not about the core. It's about Randall. It's really it. Like, I think the rest of the guys, you're like pretty confident, not only in them, their ability to deliver in the regular season and generally, but like, will these guys be good in the playoffs? Like, that's the main, if we knew Randall would be good in the playoffs, it's kind of a no brainer, right? Then you're like, okay, yeah, just get Paul George here. That's an overwhelming amount of talent and you're good to go. But we don't know that because Randall's never done it.
But even if he is good in the playoffs, right? If it's a guy who doesn't space the floor particularly well and doesn't add value on defense, and you're paying him that much,
how many guys? I don't buy the floor spacing thing. I don't think teams leave him out there. His gravity is fine.
I mean, the efficiency still isn't good.
Yeah, but the gravity is. I mean, the gravity is there, and his efficiency in the playoffs has sucked. But overall, he's
I'm talking about from three strictly. I agree that his efficiency overall is.
Yeah, but Tatum sucked the entire fucking playoffs, and it was fine. Like you,
but he adds value on defense, better passer, playmaker, that kind of.
Yeah,
thing.
Yeah, sure. But like, if Randall is what he is in the regular season, in the playoffs, you're not worried about any of that shit. You're like, okay, yeah.
You actually like his playoff, his regular season playmaking, passing. Decision making,
yeah.
Like you think it's legitimate?
On aggregate, yeah, sure. If that guy shows up in the playoffs, are we really going to be sitting here being like, "Man, he was awesome tonight," but I didn't like those three turnovers he had to his six assists? No, we're going to be like, "That's fucking great."
Well, I mean, in the playoffs, it's been like two assists to five turnovers, right? So the question is his processing really just better for some reason? Like actually good in the regular season, and then it turns to dog shit in the playoffs.
And that's the point. Like that's. We could say we know, but we're all just guessing. Like, it's all just you. Like, honestly, the case is more against him than it is for him. The case is more that his processing is an issue, which is my point. Like, this is all about Julius Randle. It has nothing to do with anybody else. It has nothing to do with anybody else. If they believe in Julius Randle, then I would bet money that Paul George is not a Knick because I think the loopholes I don't think they're going to trade Dante. That contract is too valuable. I don't think they're going to trade Josh Hart. I don't think they're going to trade. I mean, who else is there really to trade, right? You're not going to trade anybody else. So if you can't make the math work without Randall, and there are ways to do it, like we just talked about. I don't think those are realistic. But if you can't find a way to make the math work with basically like Bogey, Mitch, and some crap, I just don't see it happening because I don't. And maybe there's some convoluted way to add salary to kind of
Can do Mitch and Bogey, I think, but it would hard cap the Knicks, right? I think
it can't happen. That's my point. They're already hard capped. They can't exceed the first apron. If you trade Bogey and Mitch for him, they're done. There's no way to do that. You can't aggregate them to get to that point in the next league year because it just won't work for the Clippers in terms of the math. It's not realistic.
Wait, so how are they already hard capped?
Sorry, say it again.
They're already hard capped
for this league year. They are because they used the mid level to sign Dante.
Okay, and then
there's sure you can make the math work if you do, you know, fucking Mitch and Bogey and our minimum guys. Yeah, on paper the math will work, but you're hard capped at the second apron then. And if you bring back OG and you bring back Hartenstein with the Knicks debt, which the Knicks obviously want to do, you're gonna be fucking flying over the hard cap. So you can't do it effectively. Like, so then you just have to lose Hartenstein or OG it's not feasible. So like, they're going to have to give up some. If you want Paul George, the reality is in all likelihood, again, unless Brock Oller has figured out a way to, you know, circumnavigate the cap and kind of finagle salary and whatever. And maybe it's possible. I'm not even just totally denying it. I've been spending a lot of time trying to figure out how the fuck Brock's going to do it. I've come up with something, but I don't even know if it's legal. Unless that can happen, then yeah, if you want Paul George, then you need to be okay giving up real pieces. That's not to say Mitch isn't a real piece, but aside from Mitch, you need to be real and be okay with giving up real, like, actual other rotation pieces. It's the only way this works.
Yeah, I mean, I think the point also is it worth keeping Randall if you're going to be hard capped? And the answer seems like it's no. So I guess gun to your head, if you're giving up Randall, you've talked about both sides of the issue, you know, gun to your head, what would you say right now? You pulling the trigger or no? No, sorry, not on the gun on your head, but on the trade.
I mean, I don't know. What's the trade, though?
Randall and... if it's Mitch, then you would say no. If it's Randall and, like, can they do Randall and Bogey?
I actually don't even think that works, because I think that Randall has a 50% trade kicker in his contract. So I think that he would have to waive it. If he waived his trade kicker, then sure. But I don't.
So that's it's Randall and Mitch.
I mean, I guess if Randall cares more about the extension than anything else, which, like, look, that's, I'm not, like, I'm sure he would love to stay in New York, but I also get why a player is like, look, I love New York, but if they don't want to extend me, but the, you know, let's say the Clippers are trading for him and they are open to extending him, then, you know, it's not like moving to LA is terrible. He's obviously lived there before also. So it's not exactly the worst situation in the world, right? Oh, yeah, you get to live in LA and play with Kawhi Leonard. Like, okay, cool. So, yeah, it's possible to do with Bogey if he.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Feel the pulse of the city. Feel the beat of the drum. Feel the bass blow your hair. In Las Vegas, live music delivers much more than sound. It's where music comes alive. With artists like Megan Thee Stallion, Maroon 5, Carrie Underwood, Shania Twain, Babyface, Lionel Richie, and many more. Every show is a playground for your senses. See the full summer lineup at visitlasvegas.com.
I won't let my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. In two clinical studies, Tremfya guselkumab, taken by injection, provided 90% clear skin at 16 weeks in 7 out of 10 adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. In a study, nearly 7 out of 10 patients with 90% clear skin at 16 weeks were still clearer at 5 years. At 1 year and thereafter, patients and healthcare providers knew that Tremfya was being used. This may have increased results. Results may vary.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Just have to waive a straight kicker.
Yeah, but so if it was Randall and Mitch, are you doing that?
Gun to my head. If I know Hartenstein's back and I know OG's back, yeah, I'd probably do it.
Yeah, because I think you can figure out that backup five thing. You have, I mean, the downside is if Brunson or if PG gets hurt, you're back to, you only have two creators and it's probably going to be tough to add a third one. But that's the situation they're in now. So who's a better creator, Paul George or Randall? Even in the regular season, Paul George as a case, And he's probably a better supporting off-ball player as well. And we've seen it translate in the playoffs. It's I don't think it's tough to question whether or not the Knicks would be a better team next year. You know, I will say this, though, in terms of the Hartenstein versus Mitch argument, and how much stock do you put into the fact that Mitch was probably more effective than Hartenstein for a good chunk of those playoffs? And obviously is, you know, has some ability to be more effective.
Well, it was the matchup, right? It was Embiid.
So, it's Embiid. Yeah, but they, I mean, they might see Jokic in the final, right? They might, you know, it's not.
I mean, look, if they see Jokic in the final, nobody stops Jokic. Anthony Davis has gotten fucking, you know, fucking 50 dropped on his head 2 years in a row by Jokic. It's just he's one of one. I don't care about that. Like if the Knicks are going to beat the Nuggets, it's not going to be because they have a center that can magically curtail Nikola Jokic. Does not happen.
But they still might have to play Embiid again as well.
Yeah, but okay, fine. Embiid's going to kill you. Does Philly have? Can they match up with Jalen Brunson? Can they match up with Dante? Can they match up with Paul George? Like, you're betting. This is like the Celtics. Can the Celtics? You think Kristaps Porzingis can stop Joel Embiid? No, he can't. He can't. You know why it doesn't fucking matter? Because they have four other guys on the floor at any given time, and they're just going to be better than the Sixers, and that's it. And it's like, I don't.
I'm but not they're saying, way better. They've had to build out a perfect roster. Would the Knicks be at that level?
I think it'd be pretty fucking close. I mean, yeah, you don't have the five out center, which, okay, sure, that's a meaningful difference. But like, I mean, I think your top seven guys are pretty fucking good. Like Brunson, Dante, PG, and again, you'd have Bogdanovich potentially in this scenario too. If you don't have to give up, if you're giving up Mitch and Randall, that gets them there by himself. So you don't have to do anything else. Yeah, so Brunson, it's the starting lineup that we finished with this year, right? And then, you know, I don't know, whatever. So Brunson, Dante, PG, OG, Hartenstein, Dante, Hart, Bogdanovich. You bring back Precious. Let's say that's your nine. Yeah, that team is absolutely a contender. And I think Deuce 100% can be better. I would be shocked if he's not better next year.
Yeah, you didn't mention Deuce in that nine, did you?
I did mention.
Oh, you did? Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that he's going to be better this next year. And I thought he had a great year this past season, given kind of what we had seen from him prior. So, you know, I think if there's an argument to trade Dante, it would be like you super believe in Deuce McBride. I'm not comfortable doing that. I think that's a little bit extreme, but that would be the argument, I think, for trading Dante, using him as a trade chip.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, you're still giving up from a value perspective. You know, they also do have the option of bringing over Rokas Jokubaitis. You know, some are higher on him than others. Obviously, he isn't getting a ton of minutes in the European League, but you know, Perez has talked about his game probably is more suited for the NBA, given, you know, he's a downhill pick-and-roll guard, very Tibbsy guard in that sense. Yeah, I mean, I think you'd have to do it, right? Because other teams are going to get better too. So, you know, we'll have to see. I think there's a report from Windy today that there should be clarity by this weekend on whether Paul George is opting in or staying put. Yeah, I don't know. It's definitely, I think the point you made before, we're no longer making moves, like even signing Dante, right? I mean, those are always going to be there, but, you know, everything this, I think this could end up being, without being dramatic, the defining offseason of the Leon Rose era. Is this going to be a team that built up respectability, but ultimately couldn't get over the hump? The decisions they make this summer, I think, are ultimately going to determine that as much as anything else. That's not to say, I mean, as long as you have a guy like Brunson, you're never sunk. You can always come back from a bad pivot or something, but this is going to be a very, the next week, next 2 weeks, going to be a big inflection point with whichever way it happens for this this franchise.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it is. There's really nothing else to say. I am very interested by this report of them at least being open and receptive to calls on Mitchell Robinson. One, I would say that we should all take this up with caution, because now I think it's a decent chance they do trade Mitch, but I also think it's a decent chance if it happens, it's not this summer. We saw them kind of get a lay of the land on what Quickly was worth about 15, 16 months before they actually traded him. You know, like, I think this might be, hey, and look, they're trying to figure out all types of different things, right? If they are trying to figure out a Paul George trade, it behooves them to kind of take calls on certain guys and at least listen to what's out there, because you might need to know so you can move quickly. And, you know, I think, like, to me, the Grizzlies are very interesting for Mitch Robinson, because I think he is basically like kind of perfect for them. Like, he is
pairs well with a pick and roll point guard like Ja. Obviously, he shores up the rebounding you're losing with Jaren Jackson.
And so much of their offense, when they, I know it's been like 2 years since we actually saw them play real basketball. Shout out Ja Morant. But like, so much of their, when they were good offensively, was predicated on Ja Morant collapsing the defense and putting so much pressure on him that, you know, Steven Adams could clean up on the glass. You know.
They were with the Knicks as like, those were the two teams that kind of built that same philosophy, right? Like the Kobe.
Yeah. And I would say the way the Knicks did it did not, like, I don't think Mitchell Robinson has ever benefited from playing next to anybody as kind of like dynamic downhill as Ja Morant. And that's not a knock, obviously, at all on Jalen Brunson, but it's like, how many guys are more, you know what I mean? Like, he's,
what about Alfred Payton?
Yeah. Okay. He was really good at missing shots, so maybe he benefited from that. But yeah, I mean, there's like, I don't even know. I mean, he's probably still the most explosive guard in terms of just like getting to the rim in the league right now.
Him or Fox.
Yeah. And I would say he's better than Fox. Fox has really leaned into his mid range game. Ja, for better or worse, is kind of like a kamikaze when he attacks the rim. So, I think, you know, the rebounding part is, and I'm like, you know, if you're the Knicks, let's do this. Let's play this out. This works, at least according to Fanspo and by my own reading of the cap. Let's say the Knicks call up the Grizzlies, right? Because we know the Clippers, you know, maybe the Clippers don't want Mitchell Robinson. Maybe they're like, you know, we don't really want Mitch.
They have Zubac and who else? That's it.
Well, they have Zubac. They don't really have another center. I mean, personally, I think they should want Mitch. But maybe they're like, you know, we don't really want Mitch. We want to see what else is out there. And because our cap situation is so fucked up and we've given up so much draft capital, we really need, you know, we need something there. So let's say you call up the Grizzlies and you're like, all right, so what do you, you know, what would you give us for Mitchell Robinson? And I don't think this is unreasonable. I really don't think this is an unreasonable trade. What if the Grizzlies are like, we'll give you 9. We'll give you the 9th pick for Mitchell Robinson. Now, maybe the Knicks would have to throw in 24, 25 or something. But I don't think that that's that unreasonable, because I genuinely think Mitchell Robinson for Memphis holds, like, I think he is very unique in the value he holds to them because of what he can do for them offensively, as we talked about. And then defensively, like, Jaren Jackson Jr. benefits from playing next to a big who, one, can anchor you defensively, but more importantly, cleans up on the defensive glass. And we know Mitchell Robinson can clean up on the defensive glass, or at least clear out space so that other guys can come in and get the rebounds. We know that that's what he does. I mean, I think from an overall defensive standpoint, the idea of Mitchell Robinson and Jaren Jackson Jr. together, I mean, that is pretty fucking special. And you don't have to wait. You know what I mean? Like, he's going to be, yeah, I mean, you got to worry about the health, and that's a legitimate concern. But, and I want to be very clear, you could do this in this league year. So this current league year, I know this works. So before July 1st, is the best way to put it. I don't know. I don't think that's that crazy. 9 in a normal draft? No. But would you agree that this is not perceived generally by most people that like 9 in this draft does not hold the same value that 9 does in a
For the same reason that I think you're right, Memphis would do it. It's why the Knicks wouldn't do it. Realistically, Memphis is not going to get a guy.
But you don't care about that. You're just getting this because the Clippers are like, we would rather have that thing than Mitchell Robinson. And you can send that shit. So Kennard's expiring contract. It would be very funny to trade Kennard back to the Clippers. But Kennard back to the Clippers, which makes
sense. You know what I think of when I hear Kennard? The little fucking mean kid.
Yes. I knew exactly what you were going to say. So like the opposite of Luke Kennard, actually. He's Kennard. That was Kennard. That works, right? So you send 9 to the Clippers, and you send Julius Randle to the Clippers. And so this is still the Julius Randle, Mitch Robinson trade, but we've pulled in a third team to potentially send the Clippers what they actually want. And my perception of the reports that they've talked to teams about Mitchell Robinson is that they are seeing what's out there for him, because maybe the Clippers don't want Mitch Robinson, but they're interested in what the Knicks could potentially get for Mitchell Robinson, and then how that would increase the value of whatever else they're offering, which I have no fucking idea what the Knicks would or have or will offer the Clippers.
Well, if the Clippers were to trade Paul George, what would be kind of where their head's at, right? Because they still have Kawhi. They're still ostensibly trying to compete.
But you get Julius, so you're not competing. And now you have a chance at, okay, we've basically punted on the draft for like the last 5 years. The CBA has made it more important than ever to have contributing players on rookie contracts. Here's a chance for us. Yes, it's not a great draft, but that's precisely why we have a chance to get a higher value pick than we would in the average season. And I think that's, I don't know. Like, and look, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Paul George is going to garner a hefty, hefty return that I'm not foreseeing. But my perception is that that's just not out there. I don't think it's going to be out there for him, especially if he opts in. I think that that limits what they can do with him. I don't think that, like, we already saw this
with Tyler Hero in picks.
Yeah, that's the money, right? That's the money ticket right there. I mean, Hero's contract is exactly why you wouldn't do it. You're like, fuck that guy. But like, if you look at the Harden thing, Harden opted in last summer and his market was one team. And he didn't ever come out, as far as I remember. I mean, yes, it was leaked that, he wanted to be with the Clippers. But that was like, you know, because he opted in, he almost had that leverage. I don't know if Paul George would do the same. But I do feel fairly confident in saying that it seems like Paul George is at least intrigued by the idea of playing with or for the New York Knicks.
Do you think he'd be jealous about podcast competition to his new fan base?
No, I don't think so, because I think that the moment he became a Knick, we would all be like, wow, now we get to listen to a good podcast instead of...
Wow, taking shots at the roommates?
I don't think Brunson's comfortable in front of the mic. That's what I think. I don't think Brunson's comfortable on the mic. And that's just what I think. That's it.
He's too short to be a 1A option on the mic.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. He doesn't have that dog in him. No, I just...
Me and Schwinn are both 6'5", by the way. So that's probably huge. Why the
super jacked. No, I just, I don't know. Like, I think the podcast piece show is the best player podcast. I don't
really... Not Gilbert Arenas? God, that's the worst one.
That's the worst one.
It's
a good show, but you know, come on, there's stuff that they can work on. And Podcast B is like a fucking professional production at this point.
Yeah, and he's a charismatic guy, right? He is kind of the perfect guy. If you take that age out of the equation, by the way, I'm 34. So I die a little bit every time. Everyone's like, he's 34. He's washed. Maybe I'm washed. I don't know. But you know, it's,
don't know. Is like coding like a real physical activity?
I hoop. I
don't know if you're playing the NBA though. I think it's a little bit different.
I think my personal anecdotes from pickup basketball always have very good relevance to film. No offense to Benji and his illustrious D3 career, but I think playing 3-on-3 at the park gives me some insight that not everyone has. Think about how much people have been slobbering over Mikal Bridges, right? Compare that. I mean, Mikal Bridges is younger. Does he do anything better than Paul George? Is he a better defender even now than Paul George? No. Maybe.
No. Mikal Bridges is significantly better than Paul George at everything, or significantly worse than Paul George.
Even defense, right? I mean,
I've never thought Mikal Bridges is that great of a defender. I think he's a good team defender, but I don't think I've never watched him play and be like, oh, Mikal Bridges up against really strong offensive player X has him in jail. I've never seen that.
And it's also, you do need another guy like that, because we saw even something where it didn't kill the Knicks, but they tried OG on Maxi, right? And they turned out they could pivot to DiVincenzo and that worked. But there was a double whammy there, because not only you're putting your best, you're putting a guy who's struggling a little bit to deal with that kind of player because of the quickness, you've also lost your best help defender, right? You've lost your eraser on the wing. I mean, besides the centers, obviously. So it's a double whammy. Now, if you put OG there, you have Paul George behind you, right? If they have two point of attack guys, right? If you're playing Boston, instead of Josh Hart having to, because when Josh Hart has to guard Jaylen Brown or Tatum, you not only are giving up something in that matchup, but you lose Hart, everything he does off ball, including rebounding. So it is exactly what we want, obviously on defense. Then you're talking about who do you want around Brunson? Ideally guys who have the ratchet or have the strap, right? And they can get up a ton of shots from three, but he can also attack the paint. He can create his own shot, right? Knicks badly missed someone who could create for the bench. I'm not gonna sit here and say Paul George would be some insane bench killer, but the bench treaded water without Brunson, but the offense fell off a cliff. That becomes less of a worry. Even the, potentially, I believe Randall can do that in the playoffs. But like you said before, that is a belief. That is not something we've seen. We know Paul George can do that. Maybe it's helpful they got this new sports medicine guy because they're going to need that. But from a team fit standpoint, it's a checks. It's from a talent standpoint, he still has that level of talent. And I don't think you can just punt on the next couple of years and make margin moves like that. It's starting to get dicey already. If they don't make this move, paying OG and Hartenstein and whatever they have to pay Randall, like it's all coming to a roost, or I guess coming to a head. The chickens are coming out of the roost. It's coming to a head pretty soon, no matter what, whether they do this trade or not. So the only advantage is Randall is younger. Probably a little more durable, and the end of his contract looks better than the end of Paul George's.
Potentially. This is the thing. We don't know. If Julius Randle's in there and he's like, I want fucking my max contract extension.
Was like 50?
No, it's like fucking what? It's like 4-180 or whatever. It's like the same thing OG's looking at. Like, that would be like, I don't know. Like, then it's tough. Like, you're like, okay, well, fuck you. Like, no, I'm not.
You don't think he's worth that?
No, I'm not giving him that money until I see him play well in the playoffs. I'm sorry, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do that. If you wanted to talk about like 4-140, 145, I'd be like, okay, yeah, I can do that.
But you would give that to OG? You wouldn't give that to OG either, right? So
4-180?
Yeah.
In a perfect world, no. In the world we live in, if that's what it comes to, sure, I will.
But you would rather pay that to OG than Randall?
I know I have to pay that to OG potentially. If Julius Randall was a free agent today, there is not a single fucking team in the NBA that's giving him 4-160. Forget 180. I guarantee that. I guarantee that not a single team would give him 4-160. Because he isn't, like, whether right or wrong, the perception of him is really good regular season player who won the Knicks. Again, I'm not saying this right or wrong. Did not miss when he was out this year. And two, has been terrible in the playoffs both times he's there. Mitigating circumstances or not. That's the perception of him. There's like, that's, we, this is, if you go just look at fucking, you know, all the fucking trades that get proposed all the time that we see, fake trades that get proposed on Twitter. And you just see, it's like, oh, well, we need at least Julius and three firsts for Brandon Ingram. It's like, are you fucking kidding me?
Well, I mean, I don't know if I would take that as gospel for.
No, but the I don't think it's that crazy. I don't, the perception of him is not great because both times he's been in the playoffs, he's been also terrible. He's also not a young player.
He doesn't add value on defense, not a great shooter. There aren't very many guys who work.
To me, I don't.
But I mean, but I'll say this, right? There are other players who haven't proven themselves in the playoffs, who have some of those, like a guy like Domantas Sabonis, 4-year 186. That's what he's at. You know, he was maybe better in the playoff, but he had his own shortcomings against Golden State. He's only been there once. You know, it's like those kind of like a all NBA guy like that multiple time, a guy who can sleep to 20-10 in the regular season and five, right? At this point. I'm not sure that wouldn't. I think you might be overstating a little bit the playoff thing, given that level of production and given what guys like that.
I don't think I'm at all. I think
guys like that get money though.
He has been historically bad in the playoffs. This is not like, oh, he's been historically bad.
Sabonis was pretty bad in the playoffs, man.
Yes, and no fucking go. If the Kings had to trade Sabonis right now, how many teams are going to be lining up for that fucking contract? How many? How many teams, if he had hit, I thought it was a stupid extension, not because I don't think he's a good, I think it's fun to shit on Sabonis, but I don't think he's like a bad player or anything. But like, it was a stupid contract because I'm like, who the fuck was running to give him this, like, who were you worried about? What were you worried about? Like, he had another 2 years left on his contract, I think, when they extended him. There's no reason to give him that extension. Like, if I'm the Knicks, I'm not extending you for a number that's like, of the cat, like, what does it tell you if I give you 4-180, whatever the fuck his max extension would be. Oh, it tells me that you are, you know, in the midst of you know, some of the elite forwards in the game. And while that's true in the regular season, there's no denying that. I've not seen it in the playoffs, and I'm sorry, I'm not paying you that. And I think the vast majority of teams would take that stance. And I 100% think that, I don't think, again, I stand by this, I don't think there'll be a single fucking team in the NBA that offered him, if he hit free agency, that'd be like 4-160. We got it right here for you, Julius. I don't think there'd be one. I do not.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. I think that there's always one or two with that level of production. But he is 30, or he's turning 30. So that's not, you know, maybe 28 versus 29 shouldn't be as big a, or should be as big a difference as 29-30, but that's the reality we live in. I do want to quickly touch on something else. So, friend of the pod, CP, love you, CP, the franchise. He tweeted out that if the Knicks were going to go for a 30-something wing and trade Randall, it should not be Paul George. It should be guy in Phoenix. I'm pretty sure I know your thoughts on this because I know you're Kevin Durant's biggest fan. Is Kevin Durant a better player than Paul George right now?
No.
I mean, forget the fit. Even, I mean,
how can you forget the fit? This is not. I'm not attacking you. I don't understand this idea of ignoring fit. Like, we're talking about fucking basketball. We're talking about a game that's played by five fucking human beings on a floor with against five other human beings, and they're supposed to work together to ultimately achieve a numerical superiority on the scoreboard. There is no such thing as ignoring the fit. Like, vacuums do not exist. Ignoring fit does not exist. It all matters. So I am not going to consider that. Moving forward, I will never consider that statement. Adjust for it. Deal with it, haters. I'm okay. Owning the libs. I'm owning the libs.
By the way, this would give, if the Knicks did trade for Paul George, they would have three players in the top 15 of EPM from last year. I'll let you guess the third.
It's Hartenstein.
Yeah. Which probably overstates his impact. Do you think this locks the Knicks out of anything else they could do? You know, trading for Paul George, let's say they trade Randall. Do they maintain some flexibility? Because first of all, if they make that trade, can they avoid the second apron?
Yes.
So they could still.
Sure. I mean, they could. They could. I don't know the exact numbers, but either way, even if you go, even if you went into the second apron at that point, it wouldn't matter because you're doing this trade in this league year.
So then the next year you would be able to shed salary, I guess, or
you can jump into the second apron next, like then it's fine.
Sorry, what? Can you repeat that?
You're doing this trade in this league year. The league year turns over on June 30th at 6 p.m. when free agency opens, or July 1st.
When you say this one, you mean 2023, 24?
Correct. And then once, so at that point, if signing OG and signing iHeart back pushes you over the second apron, it doesn't matter. You can do that.
And then, because you wouldn't, and they're not going to make, but they wouldn't be able to make any trades that season aggregating salary, right?
Yeah, but I mean, I don't think that'd be the. I think this is your trade, right? So,
but they'd still have a lot of picks. I mean, because I don't.
They'd still have picks. You'd still have, yeah. You still have the bogey contract to move. So, like, yeah, you'd still have things you can do. But you can't take. So they could attach a pick to Bogdanovich, but they could not take a dollar more than he makes back. So
yeah, it locks you out of a Donovan Mitchell trade.
Which Booker is fine. Trade. He's not. Yeah, I mean, he's going to extend. He's not going to get traded. It's not a big deal.
A Booker trade. You know, is that part of this? Where you know, if you don't think you can get those guys at any point, now's the time to pull the trigger. Because, I mean, how much does that factor into the equation? Just the lack of.
I mean, it might factor in a lot. For all I know, personally, I don't ever feel like you should operate that way. I think, but I mean, that's also naive on my part. Potentially, like maybe I'm just. Yeah, it's easy for me to sit here and be like, well, you just got to wait for the right move. But like the realities of the current CBA are probably different than that. And if the Knicks are looking at this team, they're like, this is our time. We have a shot right now. Maybe we won't win it, but we have a shot. If we're aggressive and we make the right moves, this is the move to make. And if they think Paul George does that, and then they think that, you know, they still have options to improve the roster as needed moving forward, then yeah, you do it.
Cool. Yeah, makes sense. I do want to shift gears a bit here. So,
Your Durant question though? So, like, I mean, I don't.
Well, it's CP said he would. It would make more sense to trade for Durant. I'm sure there's people.
Why? Like, what? Like, if you get Durant on this team, who are you building around?
Brunson, and I mean, it's all the stuff you brought up with LeBron, right?
Yeah, but it's like at least LeBron is actually like not a miserable. Like, I can't. LeBron, you know, like Kevin Durant, his superpower. If he had a superpower, his superpower is making me become extremely complimentary of LeBron James. That is his superpower. Like LeBron does his bullshit. You know, he does his fucking everybody needs to get traded thing every year or whatever. But he's not actually like a miserable human being. Like he's not like morose. And he's just like Durant.
I wish the Lord would take me now.
Yeah, that's Durant. Like I joke about that, but like it's true. Like he's just a miserable person, and that matters. He doesn't give you the value defensively that PG does. I know he had some nice rim protection numbers this year. Good for him. I don't really give a fuck. He can't guard in space like PG can. I think he has struggled offensively in the playoffs over the last few years in ways that personally to me indicate pretty clear decline. He's not as willing
an off-ball player as Paul George.
He's just not as good at it because all of his off-ball stuff is basically like if he's outside the arc, it's pure spot-up three-point shooting. Anything else is the mid-range stuff, and it's like, I mean, look, he's an amazing shooter still. He's super efficient, even though he takes a ton of mid-range shots. But I think that stuff hurts you, man. In the regular season, you can get away with just being a high-volume mid-range team and kind of game the numbers because you're just such a good shooter. Then I think you get to the playoffs, and teams are going to be locked in. You're going to play the best defenses in the league, like the Indiana Pacers. No, but in all seriousness, you're going to play the best defense in the league, and they're going to be.
Do you think he still struggles with physicality a little bit?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. We saw it in the fucking Minnesota series. Absolutely saw it in the Minnesota series. We've seen it for 3 years in a row. He's fucking Aaron Gordon was like, you know, like he destroyed him in games 5 and 6 of that series, if I remember correctly. And then, I mean, definitely game 6 was that was a bloodbath. And then, you know, and then the Celtics series the year before was a joke. I mean, that was disgusting. That was crazy. So I don't know. To me, it's like, if you're not my best player, and even for your best player, this stuff matters. But if you're not my best player, when you're not scoring well, when you're not shooting well, what do you do for me? How do you give me value? And I'm sorry, Kevin Durant at whatever, how old is he now? Is he the same age as Paul George?
36, nice. 36,
whatever. He's fucking old. At that age,
35.
He's yeah, it's not a knock on him. It's not, I mean, he's been through a lot physically. He's had a lot of injuries, significant injuries. He's not adding value when he's not scoring. And I hate his shot chart. His shot chart has been shit everywhere for like 5 years in a row because he's obsessed.
60 TS.
Yeah, but that stuff is just like, I'm sorry. I think there's just always
a limitation. 63 TS last year.
Good for him. Bless his heart. I hope he, wish him all the success in the world. I'm sure he'll do well with Isaiah Thomas's Phoenix Suns.
It's crazy. He hasn't gone below 60 TS since in a decade. Yeah, I'd have to agree. I mean, I think you're also just looking for a complimentary player, and KD has never really, even on the Warriors, he didn't, you don't use their buy-in. That's just stylistically, it's a little like Carmelo Anthony. Like, if he's not going to be on ball, he's going to be a spot-up guy. We saw that in Oklahoma City, right? When he was kind of, when the offense became Westbrook-centric, he couldn't impose his will quite the same way. It's definitely worth it when he was younger, and when I do think his defense was probably one of the more underrated parts of his game, especially in Oklahoma City, but definitely in Golden State as well. Paul George just, again, does more things that impact the game. I did want to ask you about, speaking of LeBron James, he had a new coach who officially did his first press conference today. Some interesting sound bites from it. What are your thoughts on the JJ Redick hire, and, you know, any thoughts on the press conference?
I haven't been able to watch any of the press conference, so I don't know yet. I'll probably check it out later. I'm not going to watch the whole fucking thing because I'm not a Lakers fan. I don't really have thoughts on it. I mean, look, I think coaching is hard in the NBA. We know that. I think the hardest thing to do is trying to figure out who will be a good coach before they've ever coached before. Even when you have guys that have been assistant coaches for years, right? How many times have we seen a well-respected assistant coach get a head coaching job and they suck at it? So I have no idea. I hope that for his sake that they are able to make proper maneuvers. And, you know, we'll see. They have a lot of stuff to deal with, too, this offseason. Aside from not, like, presumably LeBron will just be heading back. Although I still think it's weird that, like, we've heard literally nothing from LeBron since the season ended, basically. Which is, even, like, for LeBron, that's pretty weird. I find that interesting, but ultimately I imagine he goes back. That's just what it'll be. And then, like, they've got the D'Angelo Russell thing to figure out. They've still got stuff, and you know, I'm assuming they're not like, well, if we just run it back, our team is good to go. So I'm assuming they want to make maneuvers. We'll see what they do. Obviously, there were reports that they could be interested in a DeJounte Murray or Trae Young. Even we'll see if that ever there's any legs to that. But yeah, I mean, much like the Knicks, so much of the Lakers is like, can we just be normal and give this person a legitimate normal chance at being a coach in the NBA? And I don't think they really – it's hard because the hysteria around the Lakers is always going to exist. But, you know, we'll see. He seems like a smart guy. Seems like he has some good ideas with basketball, and I'm sure that he understands the numbers and the analytics well. I think that's pretty well documented that he is very into that stuff. It's pretty cool to be into analytics, actually – being able to utilize them productively to coach your team and getting buy-in from players. That's what coaching is really all about. And I have no idea how anybody could say with confidence one way or the other that he'll be awful or that he'll be a great success. There's no way to know. Well, yeah, I mean, whatever. Good luck to him. You know,
I mean, does it bother you at all as a fan that, you know, there's guys who've been grinding for many years, and you said, you know, it's not a predictor of success necessarily. But does it seem almost a little bit, you know, a guy like Sam Cassell, you know, has been on benches for about 15 years, I believe. Obviously, had also had a long career like Redick.
does it bother you? Or, you know, it seems like it bothers a lot of people that the guy just has no coaching experience. As he said in his press conference, you know, it was pretty humorous, actually. He had a couple of good sound bites. Is that something maybe problematic, that there are other coaches who have paid their dues, so to speak, more, and he just gets to kind of walk to the front of the line? And it's not the first. Nash shows kind of the same thing, right?
I mean, I don't personally care. Like, on a personal level, I don't care. It does not bother me at all. And, like, it doesn't affect me, I guess, probably the better way to put it. Do I think it's kind of shitty optically? Sure. But, like, again, with coaches, I never know. I never know. Like, Steve Kerr never coached before.
He'd been a GM,
but I'm saying he'd never coached before. And he walks into a Warriors team where they were like, we're trying to win championships. And from day one, he got them to start winning championships. So, like, you know, I don't know. I mean, had Ty Lue had never been a head coach.
He'd been an assistant coach.
But we also have evidence, like, Darvin Ham was a well-respected assistant coach, and they thought he sucked after 2 years and got rid of him. You know, they've hired Frank Vogel, who obviously won them a championship and had a lot of success in Indiana prior to that. But they hired him and, like, you know, they won a championship, but then they got sick of him. And, you know, you have evidence of, like, experienced assistants failing. You have examples of experienced assistants killing it. You have examples of first-time coaches succeeding, and you have example of first-time coaches with, like, no experiences failing. So, to me, all this stuff is kind of like a crapshoot. And unless you're in those interview rooms and you know what it matters to you at an organizational level and what you're looking for from that head coach and what you're evaluating him on, I just don't know how you can judge that. I don't. Because the evidence is all over the place. There are guys that, you know, should have been, that looked like they had all the experience and the resume and everything and failed in the job. And there are guys, you know, that had no experience or limited experience that have come in and been great coaches. So who knows? I don't know. I don't know what to make of that. Do I think it sucks for guys like, I don't know, Sam Cassell's been an assistant coach forever? Sure. I'm sure that sucks if he wants to be a head coach. I don't know if he does, but if he does, yeah, it sucks. But I think teams have to do what they think is best for them. And, you know, look, I will also say this. I know that there are, I think Stephen A was like trying to make this like a weird like race thing. And maybe there is something to that, but they hired Darvin Ham. He didn't work out. I don't know that we can assume that because they fired Darvin Ham and hired JJ Redick that there's some like just because we know that white males get to cut the line all the time, that doesn't mean that every time that a white male gets promoted very fast at the ladder that it is a case of that. What if JJ Redick's an amazing coach? What if he's an amazing coach? Then what are we going to say? We're not going to be like, oh, well, I can't believe he cut the line. We're just going to be like, oh, okay, he's an amazing coach. And if he sucks, and they'll get fired. That's it. Like, I don't know. I don't really know what to do with any of that. I think it's a weird, it's a hard discussion, and I don't think it's always so straightforward.
I think you're going to say black and white, but.
No, I avoided that.
Before we get out of here, the last thing, staying in Laker country, there was a report, I think I saw it in the Post, someone with, I guess, intel said the Knicks' number one target would be Anthony Davis. You have to think he's not available, right? Especially after this move, unless the Lakers really are going to blow it up and rebuild with JJ. But, I mean, from a fit perspective, if you're getting rid of Randall, he would seem to be an even better option maybe than Paul George, minus maybe some of the health concerns. But he also played a lot of games last year.
Anthony Davis?
He played. He was relatively healthy last year.
No, I mean, look, if Anthony Davis is available, he's probably like, I think he is. I think the way him and Brunson could play off of each other offensively, like, I'm not saying he's not Joel Embiid as an offensive centerpiece, but I think that when you have a big like that playing with the guard, that's usually like a dream pairing type of thing in the NBA. I would love to see Jalen Brunson get a chance to play with a big as skilled and as dynamic offensively as AD can be. Like Hartenstein's great, but you know, Hartenstein averaged what, like 8.5 points a game last year?
Yeah, I mean, there's no comparison with.
Yeah. NBA. So, and like,
there's no, I mean, as good a defender as.
No, yeah. AD is
also no comparison there.
Right. Yeah. No, it's if AD is available, I think. I know there was a report from, like, who was that? I think, not even a report. It was like Craig Carton talking on the fucking radio, like, oh, that's the guy the Knicks really want. I don't know if that's who the Knicks really want. I would assume that they would have a lot of interest in Anthony Davis, as many teams would, because Anthony Davis is really fucking good.
Yeah, makes sense.
Were you like more into Anthony Davis than Paul George?
I think he's a better player. He's younger. You know, does he play the five? Do you play him next to Hardenstein? Those are champagne problems though, right? So, I mean, I think he is one of the two or three most impactful defensive players in the game and a top 10 offensive player, probably top 15 conservatively. That is a better player than Paul George.
Yeah, I mean, I do think if you get Anthony Davis, it's imperative, one, that he understands, like, you're playing the five, bro. And it necessitates a little bit more work around, like, there's more work to do once you get Anthony Davis to kind of round out the roster. Whereas, I mean, the plug and play wing types, right? It's just always so easy because you just,
we saw that with OG, right? I mean, yeah, seamless fit from day one. So,
yeah, it's just it's a tough thing, but yeah, man. I Anthony Davis is probably, like, I wouldn't say he's like the number one guy for me, but in terms of guys I could see moving in the next year or two potentially, he's up there. He's definitely up there.
Do you worry about his body breaking down, and do you worry about that being accelerated if he is playing full time at the five?
I actually don't worry about it being accelerated by him playing the five, but I do worry about it in general. Although, like, I've watched Anthony Davis for years, and it feels like every time I'm like, oh my god, did he just tear his ACL? He'll like go to the locker room, and then he comes back out like 3 minutes later and check in the game, and I'm like, okay, I guess he's fine then. He has missed a lot of games in his career. I don't know what to do with this anymore, because it feels like every time we bring up somebody, we're like, well, this guy's missed a lot of games, and that guy's missed a lot of games, and maybe that's just a risk you got to take.
I mean, those guys are available for a reason, right? There's a reason Luka Doncic isn't moving. There's a reason Giannis probably still isn't moving. Maybe an interesting situation to keep an eye on as well. That's kind of what, if it was an easy decision, they would just happen, right? It's not. So,
yeah, I mean, it's tough. Well, it's also like when you have that level of talent, you don't want to give it up, ideally. You would rather try to find.
And when you are getting a guy like that and they're not, you know, Jokic, you also don't want to give too much up, right? Where if the guy isn't just a cure-all, right? But Anthony Davis is pretty close to that.
Yeah. Yep. Completely agree. All right. That's maybe the shortest pod that we've ever done in our lives. How amazing. Stacy, let the people know where they can find you and plug anything that you would like to plug.
StacyPadden89 on Twitter. With the draft coming up, definitely continue to follow all the coverage from Prez and company. Not just Prez, Zach's been putting out some good stuff. We're going to have a live stream of the draft, I believe, which Sean will be on. You can talk a little bit more about that.
So we're doing a live stream for day one of the draft at the bare minimum. I can't be on for day two. I have a very important men's league soccer match that I'll be at, so I will not be there if that happens. But yeah, we're going to do a live stream that will be on our Playback, so you can sign up on Playback. We'll be tweeting that out. I'll tweet it out tomorrow. We'll have that out on the Strickland account, so sign up for that. It's free. You can jump in there, and we'll be streaming everything there. If not, you can also follow it on YouTube, so no worries there. That'll be me, it'll be Tyrese, and it'll be Colin, so should be fun. Draft is always fun, except when the Knicks make a trade and Woj reports it in the most annoying way possible, and it takes about 6 hours to get confirmation on what the trade was. Other than that, the draft is usually fun. I am hoping the Knicks trade, because people will freak out, but it'll be cool to see them freak out now, because we know that as long as we keep the 25th pick, we'll be drafting a very, very valuable contributor who then we will trade in 2 or 3 years. So there's that. All right. I have nothing else to plug, so shout out to all the work of the Strickland. Prez has a bunch of stuff coming out this week. He just dropped one today, which is fantastic, ranking all of the players or the players that most fit his rubric, as he calls it, the paradigm system. For the Knicks, he should have his disrespectful comps piece coming out soon. Also, obviously, definitely before the draft. Other than that, I got nothing. So again, check out everything, all the work that people are doing. That is our show for today. Thank you to our sponsor, Bet Online, and I will see you on Wednesday, or if not, Friday.
I won't let my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. In two clinical studies, Tremfya guselkumab, taken by injection, provided 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks in 7 out of 10 adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. In a study, nearly 7 out of 10 patients with 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks were still clearer at 5 years. At 1 year and thereafter, patients and healthcare providers knew that Tremfya was being used. This may have increased results. Results may vary.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Feel the pulse of the city. Feel the beat of the drum. Feel the bass blow your hair. In Las Vegas, live music delivers much more than sound. It's where music comes alive. With artists like Megan Thee Stallion, Maroon 5, Carrie Underwood, Shania Twain, Babyface, Lionel Richie, and many more. Every show is a playground for your senses. See the full summer lineup at visitlasvegas.com.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.